That's how it'll be, man. But welcome to another episode of Africans Talk Football TV. Hi again, it's your boy Cornelius, joined by my boy Salam. How you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. How about you? Can't complain.
My knee is feeling a lot better than it was last time we met, bro. Oh man. So went to the urgent care. Doctor checked it out, did like a quick laxity test. Didn't think any ligaments were gone. So
there you go.
Good. Inshallah, I see my orthopedic surgeon on Friday. Hopefully he says the same thing. The doc I saw last week, she recommended me for like physical therapy. And like I've already torn an ACL before, so like I've just been doing the stretches at my house. Ice, elevate, stretch, ice, elevate. And bro, like today was the first day I walked, no knee brace. Like it still feels a little tight, but I'm bending like way.
Oh, you're wearing a brace?
Yeah, I got a brace on right now. Like I got a brace on. But old man ting, man, pushing 30, dog. Gotta wear a brace around the house just to walk.
I feel you, man. Keep recovering, though, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
Nah, but like honestly, like today was the first day. Like I woke up this morning, there was like not a lot of pain. Was walking up and downstairs with big pause. Was walking up and downstairs, no brace, still a little tightness, but it's definitely not all the way right yet. But compared to where I was last time, bro,
I feel
way better.
Like that's huge. Don't underestimate the human body.
Nah, man, it's resilient. I'm definitely gonna try to see if I could maybe hit a bike this week. Not like an actual bike, like a stationary bike, kind of just like loosen it up. But
I was like, oh, you about to go biking?
No. I'm not hitting the terrain just yet. About to stay stationary for as long as possible. But
yeah,
thank you again to everybody who's tapping in with us. I know it's during the summer, so we've been kind of, you know, here, you know, episodes far in between. But like I said, man, we got Copa and Euros at our semifinal stage for both of those tournaments, and then we have the Summer Olympics coming up here very shortly, and then it seems like right after that we're back into the swing of things because preseason has started for our teams. Looks like a lot of the Prem teams reported today. I believe all of them actually reported today. I was getting a lot of Chelsea news, which is funny because I feel like before COVID, I don't even want to put this strictly on the management change, but before COVID, I feel like I was so thirsty to see these boys back on the pitch. Like I couldn't wait. And now after, you know, going through what we went through with COVID, kind of having a little bit of time off football and all that, I'm a little bit more patient, you know, especially with Chelsea. Like we've had ownership change over the last 3 years, managerial changes. So we haven't really been able to get too comfortable with one guy. So it's kind of nice not having that emotional attachment as strong as I did before, to where I can kind of just, you know, sit back, kind of let the news come in and just wait till preseason. I'm honestly trying to stay away from social media and football as much as I can until August 3rd. Where I get to see my boys in Columbus play Manchester City, because then I'll get to see them with my own eyes. I'll get to assess with my own two, kind of, you know, through the eye test. But I'm super excited for that. That's coming up here in about a month. We'll get to see Chelsea versus Man U play, or Man City play. And I'm assuming that a lot of our team will be there. I don't want to say all of our team, but I'm going to guess maybe about 60% of the team that can be there, especially the first team players. So I'm super excited for that. But before we hop into our teams, just wanted to start with one of the biggest news stories that's popped up since Euros happened. Kalliafori to Arsenal. It looks like they finally got their left back that they've always wanted. Someone a little bit more healthy than Tomiyasu, someone a little bit stronger than Zinchenko. I believe Gabriel would, you know, agree with that statement. But to talk about his Euros, he looked good. The Italian team was a little underwhelming, to be honest, but one of the bright spots was the left back. You know, he's strong, he's quick, he's fast, he's pretty good on one-on-one defending as well. I honestly don't know too much about him other than we were kind of looking at him a little bit this summer, but Arsenal seemed to be really in for him, pull the trigger quickly as possible. So I kind of want to ask, do you think this is the final piece they need? Because, you know, before it was we need a striker, and then it was we need a left back, and now, you know, everything's kind of coming together, even though I believe most Arsenal fans would say Kai Havertz isn't their number one choice for their number nine, but it's all coming together. You know, last 2 years, they finished in second place. Obviously, this past season, right behind City, but still weren't able to cross the finish line at first. Do you think this is what they need?
I think it's definitely helpful. I wouldn't necessarily call it the missing piece. I still think the missing piece is that striker. I mean, I like you said, he's been one of the few bright spots for Italy, and I think he certainly would come and help this Arsenal team, especially considering, you know, what their options are. But I still think that they need a striker. I think Havertz obviously is in that role now, and he's done a great job for club and country. But me personally, is he the, you know, the number nine that's going to get you across the line? Me personally, I don't think so. I think if Ivan Toney is there, you know, the one hit wonder guy from Sporting Lisbon, the guy that, you know, he does a celebration that game real life. Victor. I think that he would like that. That's a major boost right there. But I think this news definitely signals the end for probably Zinchenko, just because I think or Kiwior. There's been a few rumors that Kiwior is potentially could be the player that's moving on. But I think Calafiori, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name, is a good player, but I don't think that he's, you know, going to help them win the Premier League by any means. But I mean, he's definitely a better option than what they have. I mean, they have Timber too. So, like, I mean, if they were to get him, and if
they do have Timber,
I'm not going to lie to you. If the six defenders that they could play in rotation could be Saliba, Gabriel, Ben White, who plays there now? Oh yeah, Timber and Calafiori. Yeah, Timber, Calafiori with either Kiwior or Tomiyasu, I think that's okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. I just think that one of these guys, Tomiyasu or Kiwior, is probably going to be the one that goes. Now that I'm thinking about it, I actually don't see Zinchenko leaving. It would probably have to be Tomiyasu or Kiwior. Or send him out on loan. I mean, you know, I don't think that, you know, you got some wiggle room there. Like, he's still young, so you could send him out on loan, see what happens.
I don't think they would get him to put him on loan, because I think left back's been their weakest position. I mean, when you look at who their left backs have been, they got Timber last year, was hurt all year because of the injury. Tomiyasu, he's very solid when he plays, another one who's injury prone. Yeah. And then they have Zinny, who clearly he has his deficiencies in the back. And then with Kiwior, he was kind of a project. I feel like he had to play just because of the other injuries, but they don't necessarily want to keep him there as their number one guy. So they do have flexibility, but it all depends on health. At the end
of the day. He's the one that I'm saying you should send out on loan.
Oh, yeah. Kiwior. It would be good if they did, to be honest, because those three that we said earlier, that's a good rotation. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I think, Saliba, it's interesting because we talked about this last year, that if Arsenal doesn't, you know, begin to start winning, are some of these guys going to go? I think this is the year where it matters the most. You know, it's tough, but I think this is the year. If we see three title charges, no result, some of these guys are going to get up and lead.
And to be honest with you, bro, I think if it was any other club besides Real Madrid, I think that there would have been a shot of him staying. But just looking at the landscape of it, like, I don't think Barca is really going to be that big of a draw, at least in the next few years. I think, you know, Real Madrid is that one club. They've always been that one club, but I feel like now more than ever, it's like, you know, if they come calling, super,
yeah, they're an all-star team at this point.
Yeah, if they come calling, then yeah. And I mean, when you look at the team, like, yeah, like they actually do need, like, you know, a center back. I mean, they're linked with, I think his name is Lenny Yoro, the French center back. I think he's good.
We were linked with him early this summer too, but I don't know if that's.
Oh yeah. But he, I mean, Fabrizio came out and said that he's given a priority to Real Madrid. So
yeah,
that, you know, that will probably get wrapped up. But they don't really have that, you know, that future center back. I think they thought it was going to be Militao. But, you know, out of a fall of his own, you know, he unfortunately, I think he tore his ACL. He just came back from it and played. I think he played alongside no, he didn't. It was Marquinhos and Gabriel for Brazil. But I think Saliba definitely could potentially, you know, make that move there.
Yeah.
I don't see Barcelona. Real Madrid is really, you know, the only, like, step up. And, I mean, they do need a young center back. And he would come in and, you know, if they got him, bro, he's legit. He's legit. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, he is – I will say this. He's – the. I mean, this is, I think, obvious. I think the only person that doesn't believe this is Mike. He is the best center back in the world, like, by far. Like, there is no, like, oh, there's this guy and this guy. No. This guy is single-handedly the best defender in the league. In the world. Forget center back. He's the best defender in the world.
Bro, it's crazy. I just saw something on Twitter today or X, and it was crazy. I had to go look at it. It was Saliba's Instagram photos, and it's just kids. It's just guys he's been pocketing this Euros. It showed one against him, you know, against all the teams that they played, essentially their best players. And it's like, he's locking down your best striker, you know? And, you know, we could talk a little bit about this when we talk about the Euros, but France hasn't particularly been playing well, and they've been able to sneak through, and it's shout out to their defense. But yeah, I mean, Arsenal, I feel like they're obviously in the right spot. I mean, it's been them versus City for these last 2 years as far as who's going to get the throne. But I agree with you. I don't know if this is enough yet. I still think they do need a striker. I definitely think they need a striker, someone who could bang 15 to 18 goals for them in the Prem. But it's still early, you know, it's still early in the summer. It's still a lot of time left. These tournaments, we don't know who's going to go where once they're all done. So I expect to see a late summer transfer move for a lot of our teams, to be honest. To kind of switch gears to Chelsea, we've been moving crazy. We've been moving nuts these last few weeks. Since we've met, I believe we have about two or three. No, we had Tosin earlier, but finally got our center back who is going to replace Thiago Silva. Tosin Adarabioh. I don't know if I said that right. From Fulham. He's solid, man. Solid guy. He's like 25, 26. Put in, like, he did very well for Fulham this past year. And I think it's the right kind of center back that we need, too. Somebody athletic, somebody big, somebody vocal, too. I think that was a big piece that we were missing. Somebody that was just, like, vocal in the back. Because Thiago Silva is who he is. He's a legend in his own right. But, you know, with him being 30-plus, he wasn't there for every match. Him being from Brazil, he couldn't, you know, articulate as well as some of these other guys. So to have him in the back, it's going to be big for us because as much as we scored goals, we also leaked a lot of goals last year. And I think that was the difference between us finishing where we finished and maybe a top four push because we honestly were only 6 points away from top four. So for me, it's a good thing that we're starting to look at our defense as the area of improvement and actually try to make moves to help that out. We also picked up Jewsbury Hall from Leicester. I've always been a fan of the kid. I think there's something there. I don't necessarily know if he's a Chelsea player, but then again, we have cats like, you know, Mudrick on our team who haven't really showed me much since he's been on part of the Chelsea squad. So for me, if we can see an improvement in our wingers and our attacking players, more link up with Cole Palmer, that would be great. And then the big one who I didn't even think this was going to happen, but Mark, I don't, you know, the Barca guy, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Gui.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
18-year-old striker from Barca. We'll see what happens, man. I always said I think there's a player in what's his name?
Jackson.
And Nicholas Jackson, but you know, iron sharpens iron. So if we can get a Barca prodigy, a Barca, you know, one of their young guys to potentially link up with our attacking players to potentially be another striker that we can use in rotation. Because again, we are in the Conference League, so we're going to be playing Thursday and then sometimes right back on Saturday or Sunday. So it's going to be tough for a lot of these guys who haven't played in Europe before. And so I think squad depth is going to be even more important for us this year than it was last year. Biggest thing though with my team is just health, dog. Like, again, 50 plus major injuries to over 15 players last year, it just can't happen, you know, especially when you're looking to do a top four push, it just can't happen. And so I believe yesterday or today we hired a new director of,
yep,
of like health management. I don't even know what it's called, but it's essentially a new physio team. And he's come from, I should have done more.
The rugby, he came from the rugby like league.
Yeah, he's come from rugby league, but he also worked in the Premier League. I want to say maybe championship.
Yeah, I thought y'all got somebody from Bournemouth. Something like that. But I mean, like you said earlier, I mean, it definitely shows the acknowledgement of, like, you know, obviously, yeah, like we have some improvements that we have to make in this department. And, you know, hopefully these two guys are, you know, going to come in and definitely help, you know, manage some of these players. Because I think you got really good players on the team. I just think that you got some players that are more susceptible to injury, that are easier to, you know, getting injuries than others. And it's just about managing them and, you know, trying to get back to them on the field. Cause like someone like Reece James, like, he's too good to not just be playing. So like, there has to be a reason, whether it's him or it's the instructions, like we got to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, this is probably going to be, you know, I don't want to gas it too early, but this is going to be one of the most telling first months for me. Because if you look at our last couple of years, our first couple of months in the Prem have been tumultuous, bro. It's been a whole bunch of ups and downs. I mean, if you look at it, what we started last year, first game against Liverpool, we got the draw. My spirits were high. And then right after that, it was just up and down and up and down and up and down. And I feel like if we can have some sort of consistency within this first month, within that August, we're going to see a whole different Chelsea squad, bro. Like, for us to have finished where we finished last year on the strength of Cole Palmer, if we can just get two or three more guys clicking on our offense, if we can just get a solid defensive four that we play every match, you know what I'm saying? Like, just the same guys. We don't have to worry about who's playing outside this way, that way. If we can just get more consistency, I think our team is going to be very, very, very scary. So it's good to see. But like I said, I'm really not gassing none too early. I know who these guys are. I've seen them for the last 3 years. Our team is still extremely, extremely young. So it's really going to be, how do they take to this new manager? And how does this manager use what he's seen over the past, you know, month, or how he's going to see them with, you know, within this next month or so, and get these boys on his plan to look towards the future, bro? Because I think we have a team that can do some things here. But to get off of Chelsea and then to move to Manchester United, what's been going on with the squad? How's Ineos injection doing so far?
I'm telling you, I gotta say, man, I'm really impressed with what Ineos has done so far. You know, the biggest thing for me is seeing how proactive they are, especially this early on in the transfer window. You know, it's July 8th, and, you know, we potentially could be wrapping up, you know, two deals within the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. We're working on multiple people at the same time, whether it be outgoings or, you know, incoming players. So, you know, shows that, you know, we have the people that, you know, can excel in these areas. And unfortunately, we haven't had that in the past. So I'm really impressed with what they have. You know, we're linked with a lot of players, as always. But, you know, the biggest ones that are really looking like they're probably going to happen are the Matthias De Ligt and Joshua Zirkzee, which I think both would be, you know, good additions to the team. And yeah, I mean, I think for me as a fan, it's just about sitting back and watching how things unfold. We're also linked with the PSG, you know, defensive midfielder Ugarte. So I really like him. I think that he would be a great upgrade on Casemiro right now. So, you know, as a fan, it's just about sitting back and waiting. I think that there's a lot of, you know, potentially incomings, but I think what's as important is the outgoings as well, too. So, especially Sancho. I expect Sancho to be back next week. So, just, you know, my feelings are I don't think that anything will be resolved between him and the manager. And, you know, I think that ultimately what's going to happen is that he's going to leave, and we're just going to have to accept that we took a loss on that transfer, which sucks. But it's just another example of a player who came in and for, you know, for whatever reason didn't work out. So I just don't understand why he doesn't apologize, man. Like, just get it over with. You know what I'm saying? I know he's had a good season. He went to the Champions League final with Dortmund, but, you know, this is the same manager who backed you a year before when you were going through whatever you were going through. And he put his arm around you and he supported you and he sent you to Holland to get right. You came back and I don't know, everything was going well. And then, you know, just kind of went south, but United are moving, man. And I'm really happy with what I'm seeing. It's still early, July 8th, but yeah, I'm just sitting back and waiting. But it looks like we're gonna have a few additions to the team, which will be nice. And most importantly, we'll have some people who will be leaving. So
yeah, I feel like that's big for both of our bro. We just got Hakim Ziyech off our books this summer. Yeah. Like, it was so crazy to me. I'm like, dang. Yeah.
I got that football app. I was like, damn. I was like, he's still, I guess contractually, yeah. He's contractually still there.
He was just on loan. But I was just like, yo, it's crazy to think he's still been on our books.
Lukaku?
You know, we still got Lukaku on our books. So
that has. So what do you think about that? Like, that has to be resolved within. Because, I mean, he was at the Euros. So, like, I don't expect him to be back this week. But I think by, like, next week or even the week after, like, yeah, bro.
And the thing is, with his new, you know, manager, I don't know, one, if he's in his plans, and two, what his plans are. Like, I was telling you before we started recording, there's, you know, the first media day out, you know, he has about a 6-7 minute interview. I wasn't able to watch it today, but I'll definitely watch it, you know, sometime here shortly, maybe even after we record. But I just don't know much about him. So I need to get, you know, I need to do my homework on him, get more familiar with what he likes to do, his style of play, kind of the guys that he's looking for. But yeah, it's going to be a big summer of guys coming in, guys coming or guys leaving. Right now, I can't really tell you what his plans are with some of these people, but, you know, so far, I really can't complain. Like I said, with Poch, at least I knew who he was. I gave him a month to just look at his first four games to kind of analyze by myself what he's trying to do what he's able to do, or, you know, it didn't really show me much last year. But I feel like with this Maresca guy, from what I've been reading, it seems like he has an idea of the style he wants to play and what he's seen with this Chelsea squad. Like I said, bro, we got a whole bunch of youth. We should just be running at kids. You know, we should be running at these guys. So it's a lot of positives, but a lot of unknowns at the same time. So
facts.
Like you said, we'll figure out, you know, sooner than later.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you brought up the manager, because I just wanted to close with obviously the players are going to be huge for us, but I think, you know, us bringing in someone like Ruud van Nistelrooy,
massive.
You know, someone who's been at the club, someone who's done it, like the players respect him. I mean, you got to respect what he did. He was probably one of the best, you know, finishers and strikers of his generation. So to have someone like him come in with his pedigree, and then even the other dude, I don't want to mispronounce his name, but I know everyone has seen the video of him. Yeah, flipping out on the one, you know what I'm saying, on the one player in the dressing room. And to be honest with you, bro, like,
sometimes we need
that shit, man. Like, yo, our team definitely needs that. Yeah. I just couldn't help but watch that and just think, like, oh man, there's a few men that would not take this well. But yeah, man. But Young Trini just said something here that I could actually see this be like coming to fruition. I think, you know, obviously Ineos has shown the trust in Ten Hag, at least for the present. But if it doesn't work out, I think to have someone like Ruud on tuck, you know, just like this is, you know, could be massive for us. So, respectfully for PSV, I think he did pretty well. I don't know if he I think he did win a few trophies, but you know, potentially one of the bright up and coming you know, coaches of this generation. So I'm looking forward to it. But Mike just said Italian football is back at the bridge. Italian football, you guys had Sarri was the last Italian manager that you had. And to be fair, how would you rank? Let me ask you, and Mike, if you're watching, Mike, how would you rank like Sarri, Tuchel, Conte? No. I'm just your managers, because you've had a lot of managers. Mike shamelessly sent that thing of your manager, right? And he said the new boss. And I was the new boss. But how would you rank Tuchel, Sarri, Conte, and then what? You had Potter and fucking what's it?
The men don't really.
Yeah. I don't really count them. How would you rank those three? How would you rank those three?
It's weird because we won with each of them, right? We won something with each of those managers. So for me, it's like, well, for me with Conte, yeah, I agree with Mike. I would have to go, and it's probably a lot of recency bias, but it's also what we were able to accomplish with those managers. I mean, Tuchel got us the Holy Grail. He got us the Champions League, and we just didn't give him enough time. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, he was our manager in a time of extreme transition, you know? He was with us when we were riding buses to matches because we couldn't fly planes. And then
the Super League.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So for me, he was able to deal with all of that and still win the Champions League and still get the Super League. You know, the next season he comes in, unfortunately, he was only able to manage for 7 matches, which I think was not enough time, but it is what it is. Conte, you know, he was one of the last managers of the Abramovich era. He did what he did, and I think – I don't know. I would agree with Mike. Tuchel, Conte, Sarri. Just based on their tenure and what they were able to accomplish with us. But I wish that all of them got a little bit more time. Sarri was kind of – you either loved him or you didn't. With the other two, I feel like we we definitely could have given them a little bit more time and we would have seen probably more success, to be honest. But, you know, it is what it is. We're here now. We're back with Enzo Maresca. So we got Enzo two-time on the Chelsea squad, one on the field. And But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this season goes. I'm excited for it, but I'm not like jumping out of my seat.
Did you see the news of Atletico Madrid seems to be like the most interested in Conor Gallagher right now?
I saw that.
Would you want him to leave?
Yeah, we need to balance our books, bro. They already FFP already trying to look at us for some great. So for me, I mean, I think y'all noticed I've never been the biggest Conor Gallagher fan. He's not technical enough for what I want him to do in the midfield. He was good at Palace, where he was just allowed to run around, and you know they had a little bit more free flowing football a couple of years ago. And then he had a lot of talent around him to where his main job was to get the ball, advance the ball, and get it to Eze or one of their more skillful players. But yeah. For me, again, I like keeping all of our academy guys as long as possible. I mean, that's why they came up through the academy to potentially play for the first team. I think there are a lot of players that can do Gallagher's job better than him, especially on our team now. It's just we haven't seen the consistency. So if we, you know, if Gallagher were to leave, it wouldn't be the saddest thing in the world for me. I hope to see him do the very, very best. I mean, he's always going to be proper Chelsea, being an academy guy and then coming up to the first team. Let's not forget, he also has the Champions League under his belt. So for me, it's just one of them things where, you know, when it's time to go, it's time to go. Mason Mount left. I thought a little premature, but hopefully he could stay healthy this year and maybe put in a couple of shifts for you guys, maybe even be, you know, a catalyst for you guys. So it would be, you know, it's one of those things. If he leaves, he leaves. It really wouldn't be sad to me. Some of the saddest people to leave in the last few years, you know, were Hazard, you know. And
yeah, no, I feel that.
You know, where Hazard, when we lost him, I was sad. When we lost, you know, even when we lost Rudiger was tough for me because I knew how good he was and I knew that our defense was going to take a big hit when we lost him. Clearly, we're still trying to pick up the pieces there. So those are the players. Kante, you know, when we lost him, I truly was just like, I know you've been injured over the past, but you're still one of our best players. Even Kovacic, when we lost Kovacic to City, yeah. I knew what City was getting. They're getting a consummate professional. They're getting someone who could play the midfield, who loves the ball as a six, who's able to win the ball, advance, and not really lose the ball a lot. So when we lose those type of players, you know, that hurts. Conor Gallagher, not so much, you know, for what he was able to do for our team. I think there are other players that could fill that role very quickly.
Yeah. You got Lavia coming back too.
We have Lavia, who we only saw for two games last year. You know, we have Nkuku, who obviously he's more of an attacking player, but we only saw for like three or four games last year. We have, you know, Wesley Fofana. Hopefully he could be healthy this year. So we have a lot of guys who are athletic who can play in these defensive type roles, who could play in these midfield type roles that potentially could put in a shift just as good as Conor Gallagher or better. So yes, it's not going to be the end of the world if he leaves. That's kind of hard. But yeah, there's going to be more to come on these transfer. You know, CG is still playing for the Euros. Quick little segue into our Euros. But so yeah, you know, there's still a lot of players in the Euros as we are approaching the semifinals matchups here coming very, very shortly. So let's switch gears to our European championships. I just want to put it on wax. I believe we were 8 for 8 in our predictions as far as what we thought was going to happen in the round of 16. And then, you know, also now we didn't really do our quarterfinals, but now that we're in the semis, I think we can kind of talk about the games and just see the journeys that the team that are currently in the semis took to get here. I'm kind of proud of us because we really know ball for real.
Hey,
people be looking at me like I don't know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm saying?
I need the max win.
Man, what do you know? All right, so I'm going to start on the, you know, the weaker side of the bracket. I think we saw some exciting games, and then we'll go over to, you know, the German side of the bracket. But we saw Switzerland versus Italy. Switzerland won 2-0. I think that was one of those matches where we kind of talked about it. We knew that the Swiss team was very strong. Yeah, at least they looked very strong in their group stages. And then the Italian team looked kind of weak. As far as that matchup, anything surprise you, or was that 2-0 pretty standard with what we talked about?
Nah, I thought I didn't think that it'd be 2-0. I knew that it'd be a low-scoring game. I think any game that Italy is a part of is, you know, always going to be low-scoring. I mean, defensively, I mean, I thought that they were pretty sound this whole tournament, but they just couldn't score. And I mean, honestly, with the players that they selected going into the tournament, I kind of asked myself and questioned, like, where are they going to get their goals from? I know that they'll be able to defend. Donnarumma even came up with some huge saves, but
a lot of good saves.
Yeah, the Switzerland team, man, like they score, they play well. They attack, they defend. For quite some time now too, not just this tournament, but in the World Cup, I thought that they were pretty solid as well. And even in the one in 2018, I just, you know, I feel like that they're always a solid team. So this next match obviously for them is going to be tough, but I think it says more about the gap in, I guess, quality of the two teams at the moment.
Yep. And then on that same little branch of the bracket, we also saw England versus Slovakia.
Yeah.
That was a game I think we were all looking forward to, because this England team, man, it's Southgate just – they just keep saving Southgate's job, man.
Yeah.
They went down 1-0 in the first half. Great goal from Slovakia. And then Slovakia, I think they sat back a little too much for my liking, but they were putting in a great, 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 great defensive half. A lot of good saves from their young keeper. I think he's like 23 or 24. He's going to get some call-ups to some bigger leagues.
Yeah, he's good.
Let me – what's his name? Oh, it was Dubravka. I forgot. Who am I thinking of? I think it was a Turkish keeper. No, I was thinking of the Turkish keeper.
The Turkish keeper.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with Martin.
Yeah. Dubravka was their keeper. But he has some decent saves. In the end, Jude Bellingham in the 90th minute, 89th minute or whatever, with a beautiful bicycle kick. Man, I mean –
It was like scripted. It was so scripted. I was like, I mean, and shout out to Mark Gahey for the flick. Like, shout out to what an amazing flick. And Jude Bellingham showed him some love after the game. I thought that was pretty cool to see. But yeah, that was an amazing finish. The goal kind of came from nowhere, and I was really thinking to myself, like, wow, like
this is it.
This is it. They're really about to go out. Like, this is how they go out, you know, like, but no, I mean, all tournament. I mean, we've talked about it. I just think that this team is so talented. What's obvious is that Southgate doesn't know the right balance to the team, you know, without, you know, totally just, you know, turning the team into this side that is just like, you know, we're just going to defend and not really, you know, you showcase, you know, the talents of some of these players. I don't know, man. I just think that it says a lot about him, but they have an easy route, man. Like, not an easy route, but they have a manageable route to the final than the teams on the other side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I at the same time, you also got to give credit to Southgate for getting them here. I mean, bro, like, they're here by the skin of their chinny chin chin, bro. What? Penalty shootout. But I think for me, like, massive, massive, massive shout out to Bukayo Saka for making the penalty. You know, after, especially, you know, what happened to him after the last Euros, when he missed, and you know, he was racially abused, so for him to have that moment and to help the team move forward was really nice. But what were your thoughts on the five people who took the penalties? Because I don't know if you saw the viral clip of like Trent. He was talking to, I think, his family about like he didn't want to take it. Like, I was thinking, like, who could he have been talking about? But I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. I think he was talking about Kyle Walker. Yeah, you're on mute. But I think, he could have been talking about Kyle Walker because Trent came on and, I mean, Trent buried his penalty. But yeah, what were your thoughts on that?
Bro, I think that's their strongest five, minus Kane.
Bro. Kane. Yeah. Like,
Kane came off because of injury, but
yeah.
I mean, to me, that is their strongest five. And then you could take any of them out for Kane. It'll probably be Ivan Toney. If we had to think about it, that probably would be the odd man out of that five if Kane is healthy and he gets to go to the PK shootout. But
it was Cole Palmer, which mm-hmm. I thought that was something like for him to go first. I was like, yo, I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I'm really starting to like Cole Palmer. I am. I just hate that he plays for you guys. He is a Man United fan, so you know, who knows? I think in the future that door could potentially be there, but. For him to go first and for him to just not moved at all by the moment, you know what I'm saying? And he made him guess the wrong way. What a penalty. And then afterwards, I think it was Saka, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant penalty. Another brilliant penalty. And then afterwards, Tony's was crazy though. The no look.
No look is wild.
The no look is wild. At a Euro quarterfinal, you're not looking at the ball. But I think all those guys were like.
But shout out to Tony. I think there was a stat that said he's 35 for 38 in penalties all time.
That's a very good percentage.
And I just saw a quick little video on him earlier today. He said he's been doing that. Like, he says he'll stare the keeper down in his eyes. He wants the keeper to make a move first, but if they don't, he just picks his corner and he buries it. And I mean, if you look at his pen, keeper went the right way. He just put it so far in the corner. There's not many people that can say that. So it's just like
you should watch the slow-mo of his thing of his penalty. Like the way he adjusts his right foot, like right before he hits it. Like he doesn't even need to look at him because he's so kind of. You know how you and I were talking about like the basketball shooting, like
it's
the same way every time. The way he adjusted his foot to like, you know, to be like right at the center of the ball, like so that he didn't have to worry about like, you know, am I getting the clean contact on the ball? It was more so of I just have to react to which way you're moving. But no, like, you're right. You're right.
I mean, Jude, another good penalty. And then, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, another great penalty. So for me, is like, I don't want to say it's their strongest five, but it's an extremely strong five. You know what I mean? It was 5-4, and it was only because of the one miss from Akanji who went first. Yeah. So it's one of those things where Pickford did his job, and the PK shooters did their job as well.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, if it comes down to penalties for any match that England's in, you could probably bet on them. It's a good bet for me.
Yeah. Pickford was huge. So you got to give him credit. I feel like he's been good. I got to give him credit. Like he's been good. There are a few times where I just don't understand. Like it's that Everton mentality, man. Like you don't catch the ball. You just punch it out. Like you like to defend. You know what I'm saying? Like you want to be like under the cosh. But let's get back to this comment by Mike after we recap their game. But
yeah. Still same side of the bracket. So two of the teams that did not make it to the semis, we saw Turkey versus Austria in the round of 16. Shout out Turkey, man. They had a great, 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 great tournament. Demiral scored a brace in the round of 16 against Austria to take them through. Anything about that match?
I thought going into the game, I thought Austria actually, you know, like wasn't like the better run of form, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just had a feeling that like Turkey, man, they were gonna win. Like they have that grit, they have that will. And for me, they had the best player on the pitch. Arda. Arda is you know, really cementing himself as like, you know, one of these, you know, just, I mean, not cementing himself, but well, I guess he is just like, he's of the next generation. You know, people are talking about Yamal and Musiala, and it's like, okay, well, you know, here's this young guy over here as well too. Yeah. So, yeah, he's going to be very good, and he's already good. But I don't know where he's going to fit in that team. But who knows? But yeah, I was impressed with Turkey. Shout out to Ralf Rangnick. I think that he's had a fantastic run in this Euros, and definitely showed his class as well. But no, I just think that, you know, Turkey just had, you know, two really good moments of the game. So
Turkey saw Netherlands in the quarterfinals. Netherlands took care of Romania pretty easily, 3-0 in that round of 16. But I do want to talk about that Netherlands-Turkey match because one of the only games that Gakpo didn't score in this tournament, but
yeah,
they did very, very well. I think that was one of the bigger matches this year as well. This Netherlands team, man, so again, they're my dark horse. I have them as going through. I had them as beating England because I thought England would be here as well. So as far as the gap between England and Netherlands, I agree.
What do you think is better?
I think England on paper is better. But from what I've been seeing this tournament, I think that they're going to have to they haven't seen an informed player like Gakpo. I believe he has 3 goals this tournament. There was the own goal that got called back in their game against Turkey.
Yeah.
But if you look at what he's been doing this tournament,
yeah, he's crazy.
I don't think England's had to defend a player like him yet. And so I see why Mike's saying that, because England on paper, yes, I think they have the better team. But when you look at the way that Netherlands is set up, they got players too. They got players. Xavi Simons has been good to me, but I think, you know, there are a few chances that he's missed. He's been pulled a couple games just because I feel like he wasn't giving enough for their manager. But when I think he's their X factor, man. And with Malin coming off the bench, you know, he scored 2 in that game against Romania. So they have players that can score. Memphis Depay is doing his thing as well. He's been having a great tournament. I think it's going to come down to who scores first. Because if the Netherlands can score first, I think they have enough to defend, but they're also not going to sit back. You know, this isn't a team that's going to have to sit back, kind of like what Slovakia did, because they didn't have the firepower. I think if the Netherlands score first, they have enough to possibly go get that second. And with the inform, Malin with the inform, Gakpo with the way that they're playing, you know, even Dumfries. Shout out to Dumfries, because he's been doing it on the attacking end and defensively. He's been solid. So I think for them to run up to, you know, for England to win this match, they're going to need to win the midfield. That's going to be the big thing. Can they win the midfield for me?
I just, whenever I think of England, man, I anything like on paper for me goes out the window, because I know as soon as that whistle blows for the game to start, I know exactly what they're going to do. And I think in spite of the players that they have, I think that they're instructed to play a certain way. And I just think that, like, that's going to be tough against a team like the Netherlands. I mean, a guy like Gakpo is, you know, he's on fire. Memphis is creating. I feel like Memphis could be, he finds himself in a lot of great opportunities to score, but he doesn't. I feel like that's one thing about his game where I really like him as a player. I like him a lot, but I feel like he could get a lot more goals. But even a guy like Val Veghorst, man, think about that. You're defending and just like absorbing all this pressure, and then you have him 6'5" coming in, running in, you know, and I don't know, man. I think to To Mike's point, definitely, I think their run is definitely going to come to an end against the Netherlands, just because I think offensively they'll score more, man. And I think, you know, Bellingham had a great moment, but that's just, I feel like, what it is like with this England team. It's always just they need a moment of this, a moment of that. But I got the Netherlands going through.
Yeah, and I'm glad what you said about Wout, because, you know, he didn't play the first half. Turkey got their goal in the first half. They bring him on for Bergwijn in the second half, and totally different type of play. Just like you said, they got this big 6'4", 6'5", Dutch guy up top. He's just a hassle to deal with, and then he opens up the space because he's somebody that could be a target man. He's somebody that could, you know, play with his back towards goal and just have the play develop in front of him, behind him. So it adds a whole different element to their team. And I feel like if you bring him on in the second half, or even if you start him, it just adds a totally different dynamic to that squad. Now you have to worry about, you know, the ball coming in from crosses also, and then worry about Gakpo on the outside, Xavi Simons on the outside running at you from the wings. So that will be a very, very, very interesting matchup. Personally, I got the Netherlands. Yeah. I know we've been hating on England, but I got the Netherlands. I think that England right now actually has a lot of momentum just because of the way that they won their quarterfinals match. I think, you know, now that they've gotten penalties out of the way, they're a little bit more calm. We'll see what happens with Kane. I don't know how bad his injury was, but he did come off at the end of their match there. I believe he'll probably be fit for their semifinals match. I don't see him not playing, but
yeah.
Yeah, man, that's going to be a big one. That's going to be a big one. But moving on to the other side of the bracket, say the more fun side of the bracket, we saw Portugal versus Slovenia. Portugal gets through off the strength of their keeper. Like we were saying earlier, man, there have been some great keepers this tournament. Yeah. I think a lot of these younger guys are going to get called up. But, you know, Portugal eventually saw France, who beat Belgium 1-0, and shout out to France sneaking their way through with another own goal.
Yeah.
But yeah, France, Portugal, another 0-0 draw. This one also went to penalties. Man, this French team, overwhelming, underwhelming, just kind of sneaking their way through. How do you truly feel about them?
I mean, I think for whatever reason, I just feel like they haven't really clicked. I think, and I mean, the core of these players are the same players that, you know, essentially, you know, played in the last World Cup, aside from a few pieces, obviously, you know, Lucas Hernandez, you know, is starting more. I think his brother was playing at the time, and then I think he got hurt.
I think he was hurt, and then his brother.
Yeah his brother came on.
Yeah,
because he. Oh, that's right. I think he tore his ACL.
Yeah, in the World Cup, right?
In the game, yeah. But yeah, man, I think for whatever reason, you know, they haven't really, you know, found their rhythm. Obviously, you know, Mbappe broke his nose, and you know, he hasn't really, kind of made, you know, the impact that I guess everyone was anticipating him having. But just like England, they're doing their job on getting through. I think the one thing about them that I know for a fact is, like, they can defend well. You know, they may not score all the time, but, you know, they look to play in a positive way. And, you know, whether or not they score or not, obviously, is a big deal to determine the outcome of the game. But like, I know for a fact that they won't score, just because defensively they got a strong back line, they got a strong keeper, mm-hmm. You know, and they have two midfielders that are going to, you know, do the dirty work and do the running. So like, they're not going to concede that many chances, you know? So I would feel better about their situation than England's. But me personally, I think that their run could potentially come to an end. If Mbappe doesn't step up in this next game, like, he needs to wake up, and like, we need to see, you know, World Cup final Mbappe. Maybe, like, you know, that's probably, I don't know, who knows if that's going to happen again, but, like, you need to tap into that form for you guys to get through Spain, because as a team, you know, Spain, they look the complete opposite. They look locked in. They know where everyone is supposed to be. They are on the same page. Guys like Cucurella are looking like, you know, these guys are looking good. If Cucurella was just like on some, you know, neutral team, we'd be talking about, you know, somebody wants to buy this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Danny Carvajal has been solid. You know, like they have a really well-rounded team. So the quality of, you know, one of the best players in the world is going to have to show up that day. So if he doesn't show up, it's going to be slow for France, and Spain will go through, but should be a good game.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking about France, they handled their round of 16 match against Georgia pretty easily, 4-1. And then on the other side, we saw Germany beat Denmark as well, 2-0. Good penalty by Havertz, and great. Musiala just doing Musiala things. But Germany versus Spain, beautiful match, man. 1-1 at the end of, and that was the one thing with these quarterfinals and these round of 16s. We had a lot of free football, you know, a lot of nil-nil matches or 1-1 matches going in to, you know, or at the end of the full time, and then, you know, two halves of 15 minutes each for extra time. But heartbreak for Germany at home. Heartbreak for Cruz in his last match ever. You know, but it was just a beautiful ball from Dani Olmo, who got the goal and assist in that match against Germany.
Yeah.
Just a great finish. I mean, like, when I keep looking at that goal, because he really, you know how the jump man for Jordan is like that?
Yeah.
In the air, how his whole body.
Yeah.
I was just like, bro, this got to be a commercial or something. Yeah. Because they slow it down in slow-mo. It's just a beautiful ball. No one could have gotten there but the attacker, and he just puts the finish right in the corner. Nothing the keeper could do.
Yeah.
The Spain team, man. And there's one thing I want to talk about France, because I know you said they defended well. They have been defending well. But the one issue I saw in their game against Portugal, Koundé. Because I think the way that France has been playing, because they have had a lack of attacking creativity, they're allowing, you know, their ball playing defenders like Koundé to creep up a little bit and get more into the attack.
Yeah.
But Leao was giving them hell, bro.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Leao was the first time I saw Koundé actually, like, under pressure, get beat. Like, I just lost the ball. Now I got to sprint 30, 40 yards back.
Yeah. He doesn't need to be that far away from goal. He needs to be a little bit closer to goal.
And when you look at the Spanish wingers, you got Nico Williams and you got Lamine. You know, so for me, it's like they're going to have to be way more defensively sound, way more defensively, you know, just strategically correct. Because if you get caught and you got Nico running at you,
it's a wrap.
Long day, you know what I'm saying? So for me, what do you think the big takeaways for that Spain versus France game are going to be?
Like I said, I think for France, Mbappe needs to step up. For Spain, I think that they just got to continue doing what they're doing. I think a big loss to them was Pedri, which was unfortunate. Like, you know, he just, you know, he's been unlucky, I feel like, the past
he's another
recently. So hopefully he's able to, you know, get back and get back on the pitch and stay healthy. But he left and they kept ticking. I think one guy who I feel like who's been really solid for Spain has been Fabian Ruiz.
I agree.
I feel like he's been really good. You know, I really liked him at Napoli, and then I think he went to PSG.
Mm-hmm.
He's someone that I thought could have helped United, but I think he's been pretty solid. Obviously, Rodri just, you know, really shows his class, you know, in these situations. So I think like they have a really solid spine. And I mean, you got to even give it for Morata, man. Morata looks like he always looks like a goal threat. You know, he presses well. You know, he has decent pace. And then, honestly, when you look at the left and the right, it's like two of the most exciting players of the tournament, for real. Facts. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, Yamal's been balling 100%, but Williams on the other side has been, you know, he's almost like he's a different type of like electric. You know, you get off, like you get up off your seat, like when you see Lamal, but then like when you see Williams, it's like you need to start backing up a little bit.
Yeah, facts.
You know what I'm saying? Like he's about to start like. He's when he gets going, he's really quick. So I think that, like I said earlier, I think that they're a well-rounded team, and I think that more or less, I think that they need to be careful on like how they can see, because like the goal that Wirtz scored was good, but you can't be conceding shit like that. Like,
yeah, not late,
not that late in the game. Like you guys just completely, how do you guys look as solid as you do all game and then you completely just switch off like that? You can't do that. So
yeah,
but I think
there's been a lot of late goals and a lot of own goals this tournament though, and I think yeah. That could be to anybody's detriment for real.
Yeah, I I'm a big fan of France. I would love to see them in a final, but for me, unfortunately, their run ends that day as well. I think it's going to be I think the Euro final will be a rematch of the 2010 World Cup, Spain versus Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the final. Yeah, Cucurella's been playing well. He's been playing really well. Who knows? Maybe he's with you guys, right?
Don't do that. You know he with us.
Yeah.
He started like, I mean, and two, and you know, to his merit, he played our last month of matches, you know, when we were in our six unbeaten run. Yeah. And for the first time, Cucurella actually looked like he was a part of our team. Like he looked like he deserved to be there. He was playing exactly how he's playing with Spain now. He was defending well, but he was also a threat when he was going up. He didn't stay up too long. He just did what he had to do and kind of, you know, kept his defensive responsibilities as the forefront. And I think if he continues to do that, I mean, we saw him do it at Brighton, which is why we bought him in the first place when he came to Chelsea. But I feel like, you know, with the managerial ups and downs, he hasn't been able to find his right guy who understands him as how he plays. And so, you know, when he's with Spain, he feels right at home. These are his guys. He knows everybody. He kind of knows everyone's tendencies. Yeah. And so he is that puzzle piece that you don't really have to worry about. Just like you said, Danny Carvajal doing the same thing on the right side, Cucurella on the left. So, yeah, bro, I agree with you. I think it's going to be Spain versus Netherlands in the final. I think that's what a lot of people are thinking right now, just because, you know, you can't really – you know, these juggernauts, Spain, or these juggernauts, France, and England, they're just not scoring the goals that we're accustomed to seeing them score for real.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and it's crazy because it's been a great tournament. It really has been a great tournament. I don't know if we will. When's the final? Is it next week?
Yeah, I want to say Saturday. So, okay. Tomorrow and Wednesday are the two semis, and then so here, let's look it up. Tomorrow is going to be Spain versus France. That game's at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard. Then Wednesday, Netherlands versus England. That's Eastern Standard at 3 p.m. also.
Okay.
And then July 14th at 3 p.m. will be the final. I believe that is the Sunday, actually, at 3 p.m.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So after Wednesday, we have no matches in the Euros until Sunday final at 3.
Okay. Well, then we'll have to do our final prediction as well. You want me to go first? Who do you have winning the 2024 Euros? We have to do this.
I'm a young Trini, man. Like I said, Netherlands been my little dark horse all tournament. Like I said last week, we did, you know, the little pick-ems, $10, and then you decide who would win it all. I had Netherlands. If the Netherlands win, I got a nice little 180 coming my way. You know, nice little pick-me-up. But yeah, Mike, you're right. The third place game, I think that'll be on Saturday if they do the third place.
Oh, damn.
But But yeah, I have Netherlands beating England, man. I don't think I haven't seen enough from England this year that gives me the confidence that they'll be able to outmaneuver, outpower this Netherlands team. They're very strong. And just like you were saying about Spain and France, we need Mbappe to show what he did in the World Cup final if they have any chance to beat this Spanish team who's just rolling right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I got Spain win. Go ahead.
We'll wait till Saturday or something.
Yeah. Like Mike, I got Spain winning. I think that they'll beat France, and I think that they'll beat the Netherlands. I think whoever wins that the Spain-France game is going to win it. Because I think if Mbappe is a game away from winning a final, I think he will definitely be up for it. He just has to get through, mm-hmm. you know, this next one. And you know what's crazy, bro, is like they create like the few chances they create, like when they miss those, I'd just be like, wow. You know, like it's amazing. And then obviously, like, well, you know, whatever. But
yeah. Yeah. Mbappe's missed some sitters this tournament. Yeah,
and I mean, I don't know if he re-aggravated his injury because I think he had to come off after because I think he got hit in the face. But
yeah. No, he stayed on, didn't he? Or no, he did come off.
No, he had to come off. I think I read somewhere he was having like intense migraines, which I was like, well, I mean, I don't blame you. I think if it was a final, he probably would have.
Yeah,
we would have had to.
Right, you're right.
Take care of it, you know, under the table. But I got Spain winning. Football heritage, man. I got Yamal scoring in the final.
That would be something.
Yamal scoring something. In the final. I would love to see that. Let's get into Copa real quick, man. We got to do Copa.
Yeah, Copa America. We have the semis also lining up. Tomorrow we see Argentina versus Canada at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. Yeah, Argentina is, you know, as good as they are, they've kind of been, I don't want to call them lackluster, but I thought I would see a little bit more from this tournament. They beat Ecuador on penalties. That was another 1-1 match at the end of the quarterfinals there. They'll be seeing Canada, who also won on penalties against Venezuela at the end of a 1-1 draw after regular time. Before we actually get into our predictions, how do you feel about going straight to penalties after full time, like they're doing in the Copa America, versus, you know, 90 minutes, then you pay, you know, 2 15-minute halves of extra time as they've been doing in the Euros?
I personally don't like it. I like the traditional way. I just think that it promotes a negative style of play. You know what I'm saying? Because I think like if you are a smaller, if you're playing up against like a tough team, if you're playing up against like, you know, a traditional Brazil or an Argentina, and if you're like Bolivia or something like that, no disrespect to my Bolivians, but you know what I'm saying? It may be in your best interest to just take it into it. Penalties,
yeah,
you know, especially if you get through the half and hey guys, we're at 0-0,
yeah,
we just need to get through these next 45 minutes to give ourselves a 50-50 chance. It's like, yeah, so me personally, no, I would like to see just give them the extra time. That's what football is. And you know, those moments in the 102nd minute, like all that counts.
I mean, look at Spain, they did it.
Yeah, Iniesta,
country, 119. Yeah, but yeah. So tomorrow we see Argentina versus Canada. You know, shout out to Canada for getting here off the strength of Mapikin Davies. They also were missing Buchanan, who was their main striker, because I believe he got too many accumulation of yellow cards, and so he'll be back for that game against Argentina, which will be huge because they need him, especially going up against this Argentina.
Oh, he was just suspended?
Yeah, I thought he was suspended. Was he hurt?
I thought he was hurt because, I mean, the
Schaffelberg. Oh, no, you're right. You're right. I was thinking somebody else. He broke his leg in training.
Yeah, he broke his leg in training. That's what I thought. I was like,
yeah.
Well, he's going to be back. Why don't we call him
Jersey? I don't know who I'm thinking of. Somebody missed their game that's going to be back, but shout out. But yeah, Buchanan, he's going to be out for them, which is going to be a huge, huge loss. But you think Canada got enough to knock off the World Cup winners?
Nah, I think, and you know, and this is credit to Jesse Marsh, and the Canadians. I think that they've done what they've had to do in order to advance. And I think, I mean, I'll get into this here in a second. I just think, as an American, I think it's crazy to look at the Canadians and be like, wow, they're in the semifinal of the Copa America with Jesse Marsh. You know, but I think with Messi getting, a few games off, he'll be ready to go. I don't think that they're going to stand a chance. I think I know that they beat them 2-0 the first time. I think that this could be a lot more. You know, and just like we talked about in the last segment with the French team, like, they create chances. You know, I really like Jonathan David, but my God, man, United was linked with him too, and I don't know, bro. I don't know. Like, I think the one thing, I don't know about you, but for me, like, the crazy thing that really sticks out to me when I watch this Copa America, it's like, you can really tell who is like a CONCACAF team and who is a Copa America. Like, who is actually like in the, you know, in the traditional like Copa American league, because some of these guys, they cannot hang. But no, I got Argentina going through. Shout out to the Canadians. Shout out to Jesse Marsh. Amazing job in a short amount of time. You know, he has them competitive. And you know, you probably got to feel good if you're like the Canadian FA. We just brought you in, and you're taking us to the semifinal of this new merged Copa America. Yeah, they hit on him for sure. So, shout out to them. I think that they're going to be a problem going forward, like in the Gold Cup and just in CONCACAF in general.
Yeah.
Davies is about to hit his prime. All those guys really are about to hit their prime. So Canada's going to be a team to watch out for sure.
Yeah, and it's sickening, especially as an American, because, you know, Jesse Marsh was one of the guys I had on my short list, you know, because I anticipated Greg Berhalter fizzling out at some point before the next World Cup here. And I really, really, you know, having Jesse Marsh, I think, would have been a great addition to our team. I think he's one of the guys that could potentially take us to that next level. I mean, we've seen him coach in the Prem. We've seen him now take this Canadian team and his first appointment. You know, he hasn't been long at all the way to the semis. And so there's definitely a football mind there. You know, he's one of the best American football minds as far as managerial-wise. And so when you're looking for someone that could potentially be the next manager, I thought he would be high on the pecking order, but obviously now he has a secure job. So, you know, we can talk about the U.S. at a different date, but from what I've been reading, what I've been seeing, it's a whole bunch of the USSF, the United States Soccer Federation, kind of backing Greg Berhalter. And I think that is the opposite direction we need to go if we want any success in this next 2026 World Cup. Mm-hmm. But you know, we'll see what happens there, because I feel like a lot of the U.S. fans are ready to move on, but, you know, it's not our decision at the end of the day. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Facts. I think Marsh would have been a great appointment. Obviously, you know, he probably is going to stay with Canada. And like Mike said, it probably will be a good fit for him, but we definitely dropped the ball. Definitely dropped the ball by not getting him. But I mean, what did you think about them getting eliminated though? Just real quick.
It's good. It's bittersweet. It's Let me not say it's good, because it's never good for us to get smacked in the group stages, especially to teams that we definitely are better than on the FIFA world ranking. And we would say that we're better than on paper. But, you know, it goes to show that this team still is a little immature. You know, as much as I would love to shout out my Liberian-American Tim Weah, he's a big reason why we lost that game, you know. Red card early, we were able to equalize 1-1, but at the end, our legs just weren't there. You know, it really just came down to tired legs, I believe. And that 2-1 loss was heartbreaking, but it's how the game of football moves sometimes. You know, sometimes the best team doesn't always win. We would love for the best team to always win, but if you're there and you're not putting your heart and soul into every minute, every second, you just lose composure, you lose your head for a second, and that could be the difference between going to the next round or, you know, early exit goodbye. For me, I still think a lot of our players should have stepped up. You know, I'm looking at our team, like we were saying earlier, a lot of these players play in Europe. A lot of these players play against some of the best players in the world. And for some reason, the U.S. kind of just plays to their competition. You know, when we're playing against these Englands, when we're playing against these Netherlands, when we're playing against the Ghanas, we turn up. But then when we are playing some of these CONCACAF teams, these CONMEBOL teams, these teams that we're supposed to be better than, we don't show up. And so for me, it's the lack of maturity. And I think a lot of that comes with the manager, you know what I'm saying, or comes from the manager. And so that's why I feel like a lot of the U.S. fans were kind of tired with Greg, because we've seen this time and time again where we'll win a Gold Cup or we'll win this tournament. And, you know, the teams is all hurrah, hurrah. And then we start to see some of these better squads. You know, if you look at some of our friendlies, if you look at some of these teams we play in the past that have, you know, some depth to their squad, we don't do well. And so for me, it's just, when are we going to have it all click? When is it going to be, you know, when are these players going to play for the badge? Because I feel like sometimes there just isn't enough intensity for me. There isn't enough, we're going to go into every tackle, we're going to win every 50-50. We're going to, you know, even if we're losing, we're going to be on the front foot on these teams that we should beat. And a lot of that comes from the manager. And so until we have a manager that kind of gasses the U.S. team up a little bit to let us know that we are able to play with some of these bigger teams, I think this will be kind of just standard for us. It'll be heartbreak on a lot of these tournaments because we know we should have done more, but it just wasn't there.
Yeah. No, I like the I like when you brought up the competition. I just feel like nothing's gonna change until we can consistently play some of these better countries. No disrespect to any other country. I shouldn't say that. What I should say is we need to play more games against teams like Uruguay, teams mm-hmm. like Argentina, even Chile, Colombia. Like, let's get some of those. Let's even get some games in Europe because, you know, those are really going to be the games that, you know, we get tested in. So, and ultimately it's going to, and I feel like with the players that we have, they should be able to adapt to that because, you know, they are the ones that play in these, you know, foreign leagues, these leagues abroad. So like, you know, when they come together, the expectation, hopefully, you know, going forward, will be, that will be more competitive, but we got to start by, you know, playing in some of these more competitive friendlies because none's going to change unless we start playing better competition.
I agree. And just to wrap up here with our last semifinal match for Copa America, we have Uruguay versus Colombia. Mm. Man, first and foremost, shout out James Rodriguez and what he's doing with this Colombia team. He just looks like himself this tournament.
Yep.
Assists, goals, just being a nuisance in the attacking third, just doing everything he's supposed to do, being the real captain for the country. You know what I mean? Just showing his class, to be honest. I think this tournament, he's just shown a lot of class. They were able to easily get through in their quarterfinal match 5-0 against Panama, a team that the U.S. couldn't get the deal done against. And then Uruguay versus Brazil, man. I was watching this game Saturday night. Brazil, they're just sad, bro.
Yeah.
And it's funny because before the tournament started, Ronaldinho was saying that he wasn't going to watch this Brazil team anymore. And then people started to get on him And, you know, it was sad. You're looking up and you're watching Neymar in the stand and you just see the frustration on his face. Like,
yeah,
he just wants to be out there. He just wants to play. I still feel like he feels like if he's on the pitch, he can add a little bit more to this team. And, you know, this team is young. This Brazil team is young. But when we look at who they have on their squad, it's like, yeah, you guys are young, but you guys are talented. You know, yeah. I mean, you look at a lot of these guys, Vinny, Rodrigo, Paqueta, Marquinhos, you know, a lot of their attacking players, a lot of their defensive players. Alisson, I feel like, was screaming more than I've seen him scream on Liverpool in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of used to a certain level with Brazil. And, you know, this tournament, he had to make a lot more saves than I think he's used to. And so for me, it's just, when is this Brazil team going to go back to the Jogo Bonito of the 90s, of the early 2000s, when you looked on the pitch and there was actual fear from the other team? They don't have that anymore, you know, and it's sad to say, but also shout out to this Uruguayan team, man. They have a lot of players.
They look really good.
This team is, I think they're underrated. You know, I still feel like on a world scale, they aren't being talked about enough. And when you look at some of their players and where they play, they should be, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Facts. No, I mean, I think Uruguay definitely is the most well-rounded team. I think that they have a solid keeper, solid back line. They got Araujo from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Ugarte.
Yeah, Ugarte.
Yeah, my boy, man. Ugarte.
Who's been having a great tournament, by the way.
Yeah, I like him a lot, man. He's a good player. And then you got him, Valverde next to him. I mean, Darwin is always a problem going forward. You know, whether or not he scores or not, obviously, is always the question. But, yeah, man, even guys like Palestri, like on the right wing, like he's playing well. So, yeah, you got to give them credit, man. And Bielsa has them playing in a positive way. And for me, I think, De La Cruz, too. The young tree, mm-hmm. De La Cruz. He's solid too. They got one. I can't think of his name. Another Araujo, the attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
He's pretty solid as well too, man. So I actually have Uruguay winning the whole tournament. I think that they've been the best team from start to finish.
I was gonna agree.
Yeah, I think they've had the best. I guess you know just performances all tournament. Even the last group stage game against US where they didn't really have to win, still won the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, so got to give credit to them and Bielsa. Those are going to be my Copa America champs. Young Trini said he got Colombia winning, which isn't a bad shout. But
not a bad shout either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more parity maybe in England, but when it comes to these semifinals, I don't know. You know, both of them could go either way for real, but I have Uruguay winning the entire thing. Argentina looks like a step behind from where they were in the World Cup, and I don't know what that has to do with, but it'll be interesting to see how they play in the semis. You're muted.
If obviously Messi has to come back and do Messi things and be himself. If that's the case, then you know maybe his teammates can emotionally will themselves because they'll run for him, man. I don't know this Argentina team. I feel like ever since the World Cup, bro, like they will defend for him like their life depends on it. Like like this is. You know, DePaul. What an interesting player, man! What an interesting player. And the crazy thing is, bro. The crazy thing is like Messi has had such a long career. You know what I'm saying? He's played with so many players. Mm-hmm. But this guy, for whatever reason, you know what I'm saying? Rodrigo DePaul is like that's his like ace. It's crazy. That's like his man, the real shooter. You know what I'm saying?
Facts.
Yeah, he, yeah,
Still got Angel Di Maria coming off the bench.
Yeah,
Di Maria. Smoke. Yeah. That's facts, Trini. Yeah. On smoke with the braids.
I like
what the is braids.
Yeah, what is it? The braids? Yeah. Shit. But no, man. It's been a great. It's been a fun Copa America. I've really enjoyed watching. You know, the tournament right after the Euros. Definitely going to be, you know, one of the more memorable summers, I feel like, football-wise. So, yeah, great tournament all around. You got any shout-outs?
Shout-out Bielsa, honestly. That guy will always have a job. I like, there's always going to be a job for him. And, you know, to bring this team all the way, this Uruguayan team all the way to the semis, they look good. They've been playing a good brand of football. So right now, shout out him.
Yeah, I say he's a solid one. Shout out him. Yeah, I'm going to do all managers. Shout out Bielsa. Shout out Ralph Rangnick. And shout out Ruud van Nistelrooy. 100. Those are going to be the three guys that I shout. And obviously the guy that's coming with him, the disciplinarian.
Y'all need that though. I feel like y'all need that in the locker room.
No. Yeah. Bro, could you imagine? I don't even want to say names, but could you imagine like certain men, you know, sitting there just looking at that, bro? That's
and you know, not for nothing, he's a brother. You know what I'm saying? I feel like you can get through to certain players differently than maybe the approach has been from other guys. Like, no offense, but Jadon Sancho is a young 20s. You know, he's out in these streets. He be kicking it. You know what I'm saying?
He's a Gen Z.
You know, this iron fist that Erik ten Hag has may not be the best approach. You know what I mean? Yeah, and so, again, these players are divas. You got to have to figure out what approach works for each player. You know, it may not always work initially, but I feel like when you attack them different ways, you might get to see some success this way or that way, or then kind of figure it out. Yeah. But yeah, I think it'll be good for y'all.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's been a great episode. Really appreciate everybody for tuning in. And as always, good luck to you and your future endeavors.